Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Stota Shatta Shishi Mahat is Divine Grace. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Yuga Dharma Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gora Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna Vidabahu Prabhu. Would you like to speak today? No, okay. So we're reading from Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 10. Text 28 through 29, and I'm also going to do the next two verses because the next one has no purport, and the one after that has a short purport, and then that is the end of the chapter. One second here. So what I'll do is I'll read the verse 28 and 29, Sanskrit and English by myself, as well as the next verse, and then we will all do 31 together. Okay, so I'll do it by myself. Deva sargas chashta vido vibhuda pitaro saraha kantara vapsara siddha yaksha raksham sicharanaha Bhuta preta pishaschascha vidyadra kinaradayaha dashaite vidurakyata sargaste vishvasrikritaha. Translation: the creation of the demigods is of eight varieties. 1. The demigods. 2. The forefathers. 3. The asuras, or demons. 4. The gandharvas and apsaras, or angels. 5. The yakshas and rakshasas. 6, the Siddhas, Charanas, and Vidyadharas. 7, the Bhutas, Pretas, and Pishachas. And 8, the superhuman beings, celestial singers, etc. All are created by Brahma, the creator of the universe. Purport. As explained in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Siddhas are inhabitants of Siddhaloka, where the residents travel in space without vehicles. At their mere will, they can pass from one planet to another without difficulty. Therefore, in the upper planets, the inhabitants are far superior to the inhabitants of this planet in the matter of art, culture, and science, since they possess brains superior to those of human beings. The spirits and jinn mentioned in this connection are also counted among the demigods because they are able to perform uncommon functions not possible for men. Okay, we'll do this verse together. I'm sorry, I was mistaken. Text 30 is actually the last verse and purport of the chapter. So we'll do this together. Atha param pravakshyami. Vamshan manvantarani cha. Evram raja plutasrashta. Kalpadishvatma borhari. Srityata moga sankalpa. Atmaivatmanam atmana. Atha param pravakshyami. Vamshan manvantarani cha. Evam raja plutasrashta. Kalpadvish atma borhari. Srijat moga sankalpa. Atma vaitmanam atmana. Please chant. Okay, Matejis, please, Jay. Synonyms, ataha, here, param, after, paravakshyami, I shall explain, vamshan, descendants, manvantarani, different advents of manus, cha, and, evam, thus, Rajaplutaha, infused with the mode of passion. Surashta, the creator. Kalpa Adishu, in different millenniums. Atmabhu, self-advent. Harihi, the personality of Godhead. Srijati, creates. Amoga, unfailing. Sankalpaha, determination. Atma eva, he himself. Atmanam, himself. Atmana, by his own energy. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Now I shall describe the descendants of the Manus, the creator, Brahma, as the incarnation of the passion mode of the personality of Godhead, creates the universal affairs with unfailing desires in every millennium by the force of the Lord's energy. Purport. The cosmic manifestation is an expansion of one of the many energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The creator and the created are both emanations of the same Supreme Truth. As stated in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Janmadhyasya Yataha. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Divisions of the Creation. Om Ajnanatimindasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes in the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Vanchakaputuribhishcha Kripa Sinibhi Evicha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This chapter is entitled The Divisions of Creation. Whoever's been following along through this chapter, we know that this is Maitreya explaining how Lord Brahma creates the universe. And every variety of creation, from the first creation to the second to the third to the fourth, etc. So the first verse that we read which was 28 through 29. The creation of the demigods is of eight varieties. The demigods' forefathers, asuras, demons, the gandharvas and apsaras or angels, the yakshas and rakshasas, the siddhas, charanas and vidyadharas, the bhutas, pretas and pishachas, and the superhuman beings, celestial singers, etc., are all created by Brahma, the creator of the universe. So this whole canto is actually called the status quo. That's what Srila Prabhupada named it. And the definition of status quo is the existing state of affairs. This was the dictionary definition. And it says, especially amongst like social or political issues. So this is actually the existing state of affairs of the universe. Lord Brahma is creating. He creates. And he also annihilates, or he sees the annihilation. And he creates again, and it goes in cycles. And this is going on right now. We're in a period where the universe is manifest. But because we've been in this material world for many lifetimes, there is every chance that every one of us has been in the state of when the universe was non-manifest. When the universe is inhaled back in the body of Vishnu at the time of Lord Brahma's death, and also at the time of each day of Lord Brahma, when the day comes to an end, the universe is also partially annihilated. So Maitreya is speaking here of the different creation of the demigods. So we will go through each one of them. So you'll notice that in the English it says the creation of the demigods is of eight varieties. And the first one, he says, the demigods. So how do we make sense of that? How is there eight varieties of demigods, and the demigods are considered one of those varieties? So the best answer I found was in Canto 7, Chapter 7, Text 2, where the same Sanskrit word used for this verse today is Vibhudha, and Prabhupada translates that as the demigods in the verse that we just read. Now, in Canto 7, Chapter 7, Text 2, the same word Vibhudha, Prabhupada translates it as the demigods headed by King Indra. So my understanding is that when it says that the demigods are one variety of the eight types of demigods, it's meaning the demigods headed by Lord Indra, which are the Adityas, right? The pious children or descendants of Kashyapa Muni with his wife Aditi. And then we have the forefathers, which my understanding are the Prajapatis, which are, Praja means like offspring. So there's types of demigods in the universe that were serving Vishnu in the sense that they are supplying progeny or offspring, and that's basically our genealogical line of the universe. We are all coming from the Prajapatis. And the Asuras, which are the demons, the Gandharvas, or the Apsaras, or angels. The Apsaras are celestial singers. And then we have the Rakshas and Rakshasas, which Prabhupada translates the yakshas as super protectors and rakshasas here, in the synonyms, as giants. And we all know rakshasas, many of them are man-eating giants. And then we have number six, the siddhas, charanas, and vidyadharas. And Prabhupada talks about this in the purport, that the siddhas, they are inhabitants of Siddhaloka, which is one of the topmost planets in the universe. And the residents there, they actually have all mystic powers. Just inherently, if you are an inhabitant of Siddhaloka, it means you're a Siddha. It means you're a perfected being in the sense that you are either highly elevated in yoga, mystic yoga, or Siddha can be translated or can be understood in various ways. Like we have Nitya Siddhas, those eternally perfect living entities that never fall down to the material world. And we have the sadhana siddhas, us who are trying to perform sadhana. Eventually, by Krishna's mercy, we will attain the perfection of our sadhana. So that's sadhana siddha. We have the kripa siddha, those who get mercy from Krishna. But those three categories are defining the devotees, the Vaishnavas. But there's also other types of siddhas. There's like yoga siddhis, where you can attain different types of mystical perfections. So that, in that sense, siddha loka is full of people of that category. Yoga siddhas, where they can travel in space without vehicles. At their mere will, they can pass from one planet to another without difficulty. Therefore, in the upper planets, the inhabitants are far superior to the inhabitants of this planet in all matters of art, culture, and science, since they possess brains superior to those of human beings. And then, number 7, the Bhutas, Pretas, and Pishachas. And Prabhupada translates that as Bhuta, jinn, which is actually a word coming from the Islamic tradition. They have the same concept that it's like they have a subtle form, and they're like ghost, but they're not like regular ghost. They're very powerful. And according to the Islamic tradition, and I haven't found this in Prabhupada's books, but according to the Islamic tradition, they can shapeshift, and a lot of them take the form of reptilians and snakes. But through my reading of Prabhupada's books, it's usually the concept I get is some sort of like ghostly being. And then we have the pretas, the evil spirits, and pishachas, attendant spirits. I'm not exactly sure what attendant spirits means, but we understand it's some sort of subtle being. And then number 8, the superhuman beings, the celestial singers, etc. All are created by Brahma, the creator of the universe. So we understand that these are different types of human, or actually demigod bodies, but Prabhupada has explained that the demigods are considered amongst the 400,000 species of humans. And there's a quite interesting conversation. I'm going to read it real quick, where Prabhupada is explaining that even though human form of life is meant for self-realization, we read that, we hear that over and over again, but actually only the civilized human form of life, not all human life, because there's different forms that are uncivilized. And Prabhupada says this in a conversation with Jayatirtha. Jayatirtha asks, so gods are also included in this human species? Prabhupada says, yeah, different types, Kinnara, 400,000. Brahmananda also says, also different planets. And Prabhupada said, yes, but everyone can become a devotee. There is no harm. It is not that because one is in the lower species, he cannot become a devotee. Everyone can become a devotee. Yoni, they can also become perfect devotee. This is the power of God. He can deliver anyone without any consideration. Therefore, Pandita Samadarshana, he does not make these divisions. He sees that this is a spirit soul, so let them be delivered. That's all. Pandita Samadarshana. Materially, there is division. He is black, he is white, he is this, he is that. That is all material. And in one Prabhupada memories, I was hearing one Mataji, Prabhupada disciple, she was in a class. Prabhupada was speaking, and he said that anyone who performs devotional service is guaranteed a human form of life. And the devotees cheered, like, Jai. And then he said, don't be so quick to celebrate, because even monkeys are considered one of the species of human. So there's lower species of humans that aren't necessarily fit for self-realization generally. There's obviously special cases. We hear in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other transcendental sources of animals getting liberated. But generally, it's only the civilized humans. And Krishna creates all these divisions for a particular purpose. And the particular purpose is this. The conditioned souls we desire in different ways. And Krishna is actually facilitating our desires. He creates this virtual reality, this material world, this dream, where we get to act like we are the supreme being, we're the supreme controller. And through that initial desire of wanting to be the supreme, there's varieties of different bodies to try to facilitate that experience. We all first come as Lord Brahma. We may act as demigods with superhuman powers. Or the modes of nature, three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, according to which ones we choose to try to enjoy and associate with, we can go to lower species of life, but we're all trying to become the supreme. The germ, the worm, the bird, the whatever, the lion, they're all trying to be the supreme. They want to be the supreme enjoyer, the supreme controller. And also amongst, obviously, human beings, that is our desire. But Krishna creates these different types of bodies, and the human form is very special because in the human form is the only form that gets karma. The animals do not get karma. They're actually playing out their karma. The reason why a dog is a dog, that soul entered a dog's body, because it was his karma to become a dog. But he's living out his karma. He's burning off his karma by being in a dog body. But the human form is very unique. And I like to give the example of like the bus terminal, what's it called, in L.A.? Yeah, Union Station. All the trains and the buses, they start from there in the morning. They all go their separate directions during the day, and they all come back. So this earthly planet, especially the human form of life, is something like that. We get to choose where we go. Do we go up on higher planets? Do we go in lower planets? Do we stay on this planet as a human? Do we stay on this planet as an animal? It all depends on our karma, our consciousness, and the modes of nature we choose to associate with. But even if we want to elevate to the higher planets, we know this is all the material world. Abrahma bhuvana loka puna arvartano arjuna mam upete tu kayantaya punar janma navetite. From the highest planet in this material world, Brahma loka, to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. Krishna explains this. Krishna also explains that Tribir guna mayer bhavir, how's it go? Ebi sarvam itam jagat mohitam nabijanati mam ebya param avyayam. The whole world, this universe, every created being, they cannot understand transcendence with their material minds and intelligence. You cannot use matter to understand something that's beyond matter. It actually has to come from a transcendental source. The soul by nature is transcendental. Devotion to God is transcendental. So when the soul at one point decides to connect with the Supreme, then there is some transcendental exchange that takes place. And only in that sense could you understand something transcendental. Transcendence has to reveal himself to us. Krishna has to reveal himself to us. We cannot understand Krishna by our own means. And in the purport of that verse I just read, which is chapter 7, text 13, Prabhupada says that the whole world is enchanted by the three modes of material nature. Actually, the translation goes like this. I don't think I said it. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. Every living entity under the influence of material nature has a particular type of body and a particular type of psychological and biological activities accordingly. There are four classes of men functioning in the three material modes. We know that. Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Those who are purely in the mode of passion are called Kshatriyas. Those in the mode of goodness, Brahmanas. Passion and ignorance mix is Vaishyas. Those in the mode of ignorance are called Shudras. So Prabhupada is explaining that actually it doesn't matter what mode of nature you're conditioned by. If you have a human form of life, you can engage your conditioning in such a way that you get purified from that conditioning. And how is that possible? How can we use our own conditioning to get purified from our own conditioning? It's like if we step on a thorn and a thorn is stuck in our foot. Now we can use another thorn to take the thorn stuck in our foot out. So in the same way, we can use so-called matter or Krishna's material energy and our own conditioning in such a way that we connect with Krishna, and it's like taking out the thorn of materialistic contamination. So the whole idea is whatever condition we're in, whatever form of body we're in, man, female, the conditioning of Kshatriya, Brahmana, Vaishya, Shudra, etc., you engage that propensity and that form in Krishna's service, and you will attain perfection through that way if you follow it correctly. And Krishna, Chaturvida Bhajante Mam, as it go, chapter 4, text 13, that Krishna creates the Chaturvarnya Mayastristam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha Tasyam, I forgot the last. Yeah, so basically Krishna is saying that according to the three modes of material nature, he creates the four divisions of human society. So Krishna actually created this Varna Ashram system for the elevation of human society. So whether we have a male body, okay, I'm not a man, I'm a soul. I don't know my eternal spiritual form in the spiritual world quite yet. Krishna has not revealed that to me. But right now, I have a particular psychological, physical conditioning. I have the way that I think and the modes of nature that I'm conditioned by in a male body at the present moment. And at the present moment, I'm trying to become a devotee. So I'm going to engage whatever Krishna or the laws of karma have given to me in Krishna's service. And we have to use intelligence and we have to understand the Shastra to do so properly. Of course, Prabhupada in the International Society of Krishna Consciousness, he's trying to raise us to the Brahminical platform, and it may be easier for others. But there is a specific way that women are supposed to act, that men are supposed to act, different ashrams are supposed to behave, and according to that, if you do it properly, then there's no bar to spiritual realization. It's just according to our conditioning. Now, if you try to transcend that, if you try to act like something you're not, then it will create obstacles in your life, create obstacles in devotional service. Just like if you try to invite a tiger to dinner, obviously that's not a very smart thing to do, because that soul, which is a pure soul coming from the spiritual world, is not in its capacity. It's not in the right body to participate in such an activity. So we should understand our situation and engage accordingly. And actually, all these different types of, or at least some that I can think of, these different types of forms of demigods that Maitreya is explaining here, there's many examples of quite a number of them engaging in devotional service, even though it may seem a little bit strange at first that a demon can become a devotee. But we know, actually, the best of demons, Prahlad Maharaj, he's actually the son of Hiranyakashipu, is a pure devotee. So even though he has that title of a demon, it's his spiritual inclination, his transcendental position, it goes beyond that material conditioning of a demon. Or we know also his grandson, Bali Maharaj, was also a demon. He's in the lineage of demons, but he also became a pure devotee. So much so that he became the epitome of one of the limbs of bhakti, Atma Nivedana, where he surrenders everything. And also Prahlad Maharaj is the epitome of Smaranam, remembrance of Krishna. We also have Rakshasas, believe it or not, that are actually pure devotees. We know Bhima, who is one of the five Pandavas, he actually, when they were in exile, he met a Rakshashi, a woman Rakshasa. And it was her brother's name was Hidimba, and her name was Hidimbi. And Hidimba wanted to eat the five Pandavas and Kunti. And So what happened was Bhima killed Hidimba. He had fun doing it. It was a blast. He loves fighting because he's a Kshatriya. And then Hidimbi, the Rakshashi's sister, came to find out what had happened. And when she saw Bhima, she actually fell in love. And she wanted to unite with him. She wanted to marry him. And Bhima, thinking, okay, I'm a Kshatriya, so it is my nature to, you know, marry. And I should actually, it's actually the Kshatriya rule that any woman who wants to marry a Kshatriya, the Kshatriya should give her protection. So Hidimbi actually shapeshifted into a beautiful woman. And then her and Bhima united. And they had a son, Ghatotkacha, who actually fought in the Battle of Kurukshetra on the side of the Pandavas. And he killed he was the chief of the Rakshasas on the Pandava army. And then he killed Alambusha, who was the chief Rakshasa on the Kaurava army. Now it's quite interesting because when they were fighting, the Rakshasas, when the sun goes down and it becomes night, the Rakshasas get like extreme power. So the sun went down and it was night. And all the Rakshasas were like battling like anything. And they have all these mystic powers. And so Alambusha and Ghatotkacha were fighting. Sometimes they would disappear and reappear in the air, shooting thousands of arrows at once, fire and all these celestial weapons. And sometimes even Ghatotkacha, he would summon ghosts and different demons coming from the earth, attacking Alambusha, and Alambusha would do the same thing. Eventually, Ghatotkacha got the upper hand, and he cut the head off of Alambusha. Now, Ghatotkacha actually did great service in the Battle of Kurukshetra because Karna was actually blessed. He was actually given the Shakti weapon as a boon from the demigods. And this Shakti weapon was so powerful that it can actually kill Arjuna. So, one day in the Battle of Kurukshetra, Karna was planning to use this Shakti weapon on Arjuna. And Ghatotkacha actually was wreaking havoc on that day, killing tens and thousands of soldiers just by himself. So he was doing so much chaos, killing so much of the Kaurava army, that Karna started fighting him. And Ghatotkacha put up a very good fight. And Karna, we know, is almost as powerful as Arjuna. There's different categories of fighters in Mahabharata. We have the Atiratas, which are the best. They can fight an unlimited number of soldiers single-handedly. And the warriors that fit the Atirata category are soldiers like Bhishma Dev, Arjuna, Dronacharya, and Karna's almost up there. Then right under that, and maybe even Bhima could be perhaps up there. Right under that, we have the Maharatas, those who can fight thousands of soldiers at once. And those are soldiers like Duryodhana and even Maharaj Yudhishthir, soldiers of that category, Ashwatthama. They're a little bit lower in rank, but they're still very powerful. So Ghatotkacha was so powerful that he was almost about to defeat Karna. So Karna, out of being so desperate, he decided to use... He didn't have any other option. He used the Shakti weapon on Ghatotkacha. And what happened was this Shakti weapon hit Ghatotkacha. Ghatotkacha was pierced in the heart. And as he was dying, he expanded himself gigantically. So even as he was dying, he engaged in devotional service because as a giant, he purposely fell on the core of an army and crushed like tens and thousands of soldiers. So even as he was dying, he made an offering to Krishna to kill the core of an army. And so after that, the Pandavas were very sad that their son, Ghatotkacha, had died in battle this day. But actually, Krishna was very happy. After the battle of the day, they all went to their camp, and Krishna was the only one that was celebrating. And the Pandavas were a little bit confused. We have Ghatotkacha, who's so dear to us. He died, but you're celebrating. And Krishna explained, the reason why I'm celebrating is because that Shakti weapon could only be used once. And it was meant, Karna was planning to kill Arjuna. And if Arjuna died, the war would be over. The Kauravas would have won. But he used the Shakti weapon on Ghatotkacha. So now, basically, we have the battle in our hand. We're going to win. Ghatotkacha has actually explained he's bald. He has pointed ears and fangs. His chariot has skulls on them. If you saw him, you'd be horrified. But he is actually a pure devotee. So that's one example of a Rakshasa being a devotee. Okay, and there's one more other thing I'd like to say, and then we'll end, is because I read the other verse also, the next verse, the last verse, and purport of this chapter. Purport, Prabhupada says, the cosmic manifestation is an expansion of one of the many energies of the Supreme Personality Godhead. The Creator and the created are both emanations of the same Supreme Truth, as stated in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Chanman Yasya Yato Nayad Itaras. I forget this verse, it's been a long time. I'll read it though. Yeah, here we go. Jamanadiyasya yato nuayat itaras charvesh abhigasurat tene brahma hridaya adi kabage muryanti yat suryaha tejo bari mritam yata vanimayo yatra chisargo mrisha damna swainam sada nirasta kuyakam satyam param dimahi. Translation. O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance, and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations. Directly and indirectly meaning if someone pinches me and you see it, I'm pinching myself right now, I can feel it directly. But you guys you're also experiencing it, but you're experiencing it indirectly. So Krishna is both experiencing directly and indirectly everything of the cosmic manifestations, which is pretty mind-blowing. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. So we hear he first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto Lord Brahma. He also imparted the knowledge how to create the universe, and that's what this chapter was about in the Bhagavatam. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusory representations of water seen in fire or land seen in water. So even the demigods are placed into illusion. Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita that those in the mode of goodness, they worship the demigods. Those in the mode of passion, they worship powerful living entities, even like demonic living entities or people on even like earth, human living entities, and those in the mode of passion worship ghosts and spirits. And he also says, Kamaista Sriya Hriti Gyana Prabhupada Nadevitaha Tam Tam Niyamam Astaya Prakata Niyata Swaya. What were you saying? Okay. And Krishna is saying here that those whose knowledge has been stolen by illusion, they worship the demigods for a material desires, for a material purpose. So even though worshiping the demigods may be in the mode of goodness, this is because it's according to the Vedas. If you want to enjoy materially, you worship the demigods. That's the bona fide way to get material prosperity. But it is still not considered very intelligent. Krishna says those whose intelligence has been stolen do this. Anyways, I guess I'll end here. Is there any questions or comments or corrections? Hare Krishna. Yes. Satchitana Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. You very nicely described about the fact that sometimes a demon can be a pure devotee, or a devotee can be a demon can be a pure devotee, or a pure devotee can be like a demon. Didn't you mention something?
No. I didn't say pure.
I'm sorry. Devotee. You didn't say pure devotee. I'm sorry. Yeah. So I probably misunderstood that when you mentioned Prahlad Maharaj, he actually, you know, in my understanding, even he himself offers a prayer by saying that he's born in the family of demons. Out of humility, he says that. So I was misunderstanding, I think. But he would actually never be like a demoniac. If somebody might be thinking like that, he's not. But the question that I have now is, can you just mention, because in your lecture you were saying that only civilized human beings can achieve, are qualified to be liberated or do service, isn't it? Something like that. Only civilized human beings. So the question will be, what will be the preliminary or the basic qualities that you can name for a civilized human being?
No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. So if we're not following that, we're not even considered civilized humans.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you, yes.
So if a demon can become a pure devotee or be a pure devotee, what's a demon about him? I mean, what was demon about Prahlad Maharaj? Why, I mean, just because is it as superficial as he just happened to be born in that family?
It's the form. It's the form of body. Just like Ghatotkacha was considered a Rakshasa. He even looked like a Rakshasa. But he was a pure devotee. He fought for the Pandava army. So Prahlad Maharaj is born in the lineage of demons. So he's, even Krishna says that of all the daityas, out of all the demons, he is Prahlad. So even Krishna recognizes Prahlad as a so-called demon.
So it's a very superficial consideration?
Well, it's external, because the soul by nature is transcendental. The soul is actually a pure devotee. So to say someone's a demon or whatever, that's just their external circumstance.
What about Vritashura, though? Was he kind of a bit more?
He's also a pure devotee. That's Chitraketu Maharaj was cursed to become a demon. And what's interesting about him is he took the form as a demon, actually very happily. He considered this curse as Krishna's mercy. He said, this is what Krishna wants me to do. I guess I will happily take the form of a demon. So he took his next birth as Vritrasura. And actually in that form, he was killing devotees even. He was killing demigods and devotees. But internally, he always remembered he was a devotee of Krishna. But he understood that this is, for some reason, I don't understand this right now. Maybe I can't comprehend why, but Krishna wants me to do this. So I'm taking it as my service to do. But Vritrasura was a pure devotee. And then he actually ordered Indra to cut his head off because he knew that when I die, I'm going back to Godhead. So I actually want you, Indra, to kill me. Please cut my head off and I'll show you how to do it. But then we have like Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, that we know they're Jaya and Vijaya. They're also pure devotees, but they take the form as demons. But this is a special category because this is all Leela. Krishna arranged it in such a way. But Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, they weren't like Vritasura in the sense that they remembered they were devotees. They actually really thought they were demons. They actually really thought they hated Krishna. And that's also for a transcendental purpose. As we know, there's a whole story behind that.
There's one definition in the Bhagavad Gita where it says that who is a demon and who is a demigod. The demigods are those who obey the Lord. Demons are those who disobey or who don't follow the orders of the Lord. That's like in general. The only criterion. So, yeah. When I was hearing about Prahlad Maharaj, I was thinking he doesn't have anything because actually Narada Muni preached to his mother and he was inside of his mother and from the beginning he was the whole life a pure devotee. But then in our understanding, in my understanding, sometimes I was considering what the behavior, the way your actions are, that's one of the characteristics of being a demon. Yeah. So when he said that he was, or Krishna himself, we were thinking, well, like a pastime, or just he himself, Prahlad said, out of humility, I don't know.
I just want to say comments. You are one of my favorite speakers.
Hare Krishna. Can you please give us a nectarian book distribution story that I will relish for years on to end?
I think Bhrigupati should. Or maybe Sean Murari can ask a question, because that was like unrelated to the class. But if we have time, we can say something.
You were saying how only the civilized human being can attain perfection, and civilized human being is one who is following the four legs. We also know that Lord Chaitanya came to give the chanting of the holy name even to the chandalas, even to the dog eaters. So just by chanting the holy name, they can, even the lowest can attain ultimate perfection eventually. Yes. And we see that he even made animals chant. So how to understand?
Is it a question or?
Yeah, you were saying that only the civilized human being can attain perfection, but Lord Chaitanya came to give the holy name even to the most fallen.
Well, I did also say that for the most part, I did mention this, I do remember, that for the most part, generally speaking, we don't see like animals and things like that chanting on very rare occasions. We have Gajendra, we have, what was that, vulture in Ram Lila, Jatayu, and we have a few others. And then we have, when Lord Chaitanya was dancing in Jarikanda Forest, all the animals were chanting with him. So obviously those are extraordinary events. Animals can get mercy because they're also souls. We can give them prasadam. We can chant the holy name. We have Bhakta Cat here, the gray cat that hangs out. It's like a devotee, born and raised in the community. So, but generally speaking, we don't really see that. We see humans here listening to the Bhagavatam class. We don't really see giraffes coming every day to the temple. But yeah, Lord Chaitanya came to deliver the most fallen, but it's not that we stay fallen. The chanting is to purify us, but we can't chant and then break the regs and say, well, I'm getting Lord Chaitanya's mercy because he came to give us the chanting. That's actually one of the offenses of the holy names. Performing sinful activities on the strength of chanting, that I'll perform sin and then chant and I'll get purified and it's all good. That's considered offensive chanting. So the chanting is meant to elevate us to the platform of not engaging in sinful activity and developing our love for Krishna. Hope that answered your question. As far as a book distribution story, I think it's over time. Maybe we can say that later or something. Okay. Granthiraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hari Bol.